This is the Mother Time Madness podcast with Courts. I am Courts, and today's episode is raising pregnancy and postpartum networks in Canberra.
And when I heard that Native Americans were 3 to 4 more times more likely to die due to pregnancy-related complications compared to the white population, I think that's kind of when I started to dig.
I'm chatting with Erin on the podcast today. Erin is a hormone and period nutritionist and founded ONAS Collaborative and Moonly Nutrition and Wellness. Of course, we get to know our guests before we get into it. So what park are we hitting to on Erin's list?
So I personally love Edison. Edison Park was also just within walking distance of the kid that I watched the house. I personally like it there. They have several different little park areas. Yep. There's ducks over there. So for little kids, it's so, so good. They can just run around.
Now, where are you going on the weekend in Canberra?
Epic Fresh Food Market. So we used to go to the coast every weekend and then we realized how expensive it was. So we don't do that anymore. So now we go to, that's Epic, right? Right. Far from here.
Yep.
Yeah. So we love going there and getting like all of our food. At the Sunday markets, there's this new, they're vegan, egg-free, dairy-free, soy-free, nut-free donuts. And they're probably the best donuts I've ever had.
Amazing.
And they make them completely fresh there on the spot.
Well, I'm glad that you brought up all those allergy foods because you have a lot of allergies, or you deal with your endo by excluding allergenic foods?
Both. So I stay away from inflammatory foods, but then because I have a really shit gut, I have a lot of allergies. So I'm allergic to all nuts and seeds and all the things that are related to nuts and seeds, like peaches, cherries, mangoes.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Yeah, it's
not
sucks.
The mango.
I know.
Not the mango.
Avocado, like
So because of that, you like to go for dinner and drinks to
Tipsy Bull.
Apparently very allergy friendly.
Very allergy friendly. Every time I go in there, I basically take in my little card. They look at it. They're like, cool, we'll come up with something.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. They're really, really good. Super accommodating.
I've only been there for gin. Erin Nicole is an American woman living in Canberra and my first guest who is not yet a mother. I say yet because Erin wants kids and really thought by now she would have them. I say by now, but she is still so young and so thriving. At 25, she has already founded a website, ONAS Collaborative, dedicated to providing mothers free educational maternity care with a provider directory. This is the reason I decided to have someone who's not yet a mother on a motherhood-based podcast, but honestly, I could talk to her all day. I think by now you probably know, I love raw and vulnerable people. People who know how to talk through their lives, traumatic as they may be, with a smile on their face because they put in the hard work. I got more than I expected from this interview and I walked away texting my husband saying, I hope she wants to be my friend because I really want to be hers. To follow Erin on Instagram, you can find her at Moonly, that's MOONLI.X. And you can also follow ONAS Collaborative, ONAS Collaborative, all one word. The world needs more honesty, and with Erin, you are going to get it. Please, please be aware there are some serious triggers in this podcast, which involve child abuse, PTSD, and potential infertility triggers. Erin starts by telling me why someone who has no kids of her own yet works so hard on dedicating her life to pregnant people.
So growing up in the US, I think the first time I actually like became very maternal was pretty young, like 4 years old. Like I was very, very maternal. And I used to wake up every day at like 4 a.m. to watch like this birthing show on the TV. Like my mom was like, I don't know why
she watched
this.
The rest of us are like Disney kids.
So like I knew from a really young age, I was like, I want 3 or 4 kids. Like this is what I want. I can't wait to become a mom. Basically nannied, work at the YMCA since I was 15 years old in the nursery. So I've always worked with kids. But then I went to college for actually, what did I originally go for? Biology pre-med, probably.
Okay.
Yeah, so originally, well, in the hopes of becoming an orthopedic surgeon, but then on that journey, that led me into anti-human trafficking work.
Wow.
And I think because I went into that work, one, passionate about women, but I think also the child sex trafficking was really, really big for me. So that kind of took me back into being passionate about children. But when I came out of that, I basically was diagnosed with PTSD when I was 22 from my own sexual abuse experience. Oh, geez. So I couldn't take on like the anti-human trafficking field anymore because I was working with young girls like as young as 14 and 13 that had been trafficked in Columbus. And I was like, I'm taking on their stories, trying to deal with my own stuff. And it wasn't clashing.
Yeah.
Like there's no way like it was going to mend together.
Jesus, I'm so sorry to hear that you went through that. When That's you get right. diagnosed with PTSD kind of so many years after.
Exactly.
Is it quite you kind of think, well, no, I'm fine. Like, I'm living my life. I'm out there. I've got boyfriends. I've got, you know, friends. I'm partying. I'm a normal 22-year-old.
Yeah, exactly.
And then they say, well, no, you've got a lot going on.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, I actually didn't remember the sexual abuse until I was 21. So it was actually when I came to Australia to study abroad.
Wow.
It was the first time I had sex with my partner now. So I think for like a year and a half, I was convincing myself like, oh, it's normal to like be terrified to go to sleep. It's normal to have these nightmares. It's normal to like...
So you'd repressed it entirely.
Yeah, like I didn't have any memories until I was 21. And then it slowly came in through nightmares, which turned into flashbacks.
And then a therapist obviously helped you get to...
get to a point, yeah. Because I went to the ER and then they were like, we think you're having panic attacks. And then the doctor was like, yeah, look, I think you have this, but you have to get a proper diagnosis by a psychologist. Yeah. And that's why I went to a psychologist and they put me in EMDR, which helped like pretty much eliminated all of my PTSD symptoms.
Please excuse my ignorance. EMDR. No, it's okay.
When we go to sleep at night, if we're processing something throughout our day, when we go to sleep, our eyes actually move back and forth to process what happened. But when you go through a traumatic event, sometimes your eyes don't process it at night, which means your brain hasn't processed. So it's basically this technique where they have this light that sits in front of you. And while you think about the trauma, it actually, I don't know, it's like it forces your eyes to voluntarily, well, involuntarily do that action of moving back and forth while you're thinking about the memory. Right. And within three sessions, my PTSD was gone. So it really, really helped me. I know it doesn't work for everybody, especially depending on how severe the trauma is.
But so when you look back now, the trauma from your childhood that you managed to repress, and then you being like maternal really early on, would you think there was like some sort of...
Oh, I never connected that. Yeah. That's a good point. I never thought about it that way because I would say, yeah, sexual abuse probably started when I was about four and that maternal side probably kicked in when I was about four.
Yeah, you felt
you're the first person.
There
we go. Maybe that is why I kicked in so early. It's totally possible.
Yeah, because I admire people who have a maternal side and especially from such a young age. And to me, it's quite interesting to hear that you at four were so invested. It's one thing to watch my 2-year-old carry her, her dolly around and, you know, nurse it, but to kind of harbor it and then water it, allow it to grow as you were getting older into your teens. Like that to me is amazing.
Yeah.
So you move to Australia, you meet this guy. Are you still maternal at this point?
Yes, I was still doing sex trafficking work in Sydney, but it was mainly a little bit of sex trafficking, mainly labor and organ trafficking.
And are you, so what are you qualified in?
Actually, I have a degree in world politics now.
Right. We've
done it
all.
The biology for you. So I have a degree in world politics, specialization in foreign policy and security. But yeah, essentially after I came out of all of the stuff with the PTSD, that's when I kind of led me into my own health journey. And on that journey, I was starting to listen to a lot of podcasts. And there was this American podcast talking about the Native American maternal mortality rate, which is something I had never heard about. Like I knew that we had Native American in our family, but never really heard anything about it. And when I heard that Native Americans were 3 to 4 more times more likely to die due to pregnancy-related complications compared to the white population, I think that's kind of when I started to dig. Because I do remember vaguely at one job, one girl saying, like, did you know that black women are 3 to 4 times more likely to die due to pregnancy-related complications? And I was like, what? Like, just shut up.
Kind of go, why? Why?
Yeah, exactly.
If it's the healthcare system, if it's...
I mean, the U.S. is meant to have one of the best healthcare... Well, medical assistance in the world, right? Not the best healthcare. So because of that, I think that's kind of the start of the journey when I started to look into, okay, so why is the maternal mortality rate so high in the US? And why am I more likely to die? And I think it simply started with the lack of midwives. So when I moved back here 2.5 years ago, my sister-in-law got pregnant. And I remember her being like, yeah, I'm going to go see my midwife and then my pelvic floor PT. And yeah, I'm going to go do this. And I was like, whoa, what is a midwife? Like, I had not even heard.
Really?
The, never heard the word midwife. Because
is it all doctors and, it's, and
yeah,
nurses?
So in the U.S., only 10% of people give birth with midwives.
Wow.
When only 85% of pregnancies are actually considered low risk. So 85% of pregnancies in the U.S. could actually be done with midwives.
I have heard there's a really high percentage of cesarean, like
choosing to have a cesarean, like opting in essentially before seeing what your pregnancy is like.
And yeah, so I think ours is at 33%. I think Australians' private hospitals are catching up.
Right.
I think one of the ones in Sydney is at 33% as well. Yeah, it's insane. And I think also because I started to look at more of that midwifery care model, I started asking my friends and family with kids, like, did you know you could have had a midwife? And they're like, no, what's that? And as I was explaining, and when I was explaining to them like what it would look like and what it's like here in Australia, they're like, I wish I would have known that. I had no idea that I even had another option.
Yeah.
And I think that's when I also started to learn a bit more about like circumcisions and all of that. And my sister was like, I didn't realize I had a choice. I just thought it was a requirement. Like, I didn't think anything was really my choice when it came to birth and pregnancy and postpartum, which is insane. And so I originally thought about becoming a midwife, and then I was like, I have a lot of student debt, so that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
And then I was trying to think what was still missing in the U.S. system that I could do that was still affordable to help, especially Black and colored birthers and women. And I think that's when I came across the idea. I think I was on Airbnb one day and I was like, what if there was just a simple place where people could find all the providers that they need in their local area that they don't know about? People don't know about midwives. They don't know about pelvic floor PTs. Pelvic floor PTs are like this nuance. Just nobody knows about it. You know, massage therapists, mental health specialists, doulas. Doulas are up and coming. They're still not super common.
I remember my sister gave birth in the UK with both her kids.
Yeah.
And doulas were more prevalent in the UK for her. I can't remember if she ended up using one for a second child. She did have a home birth.
Yeah.
And I know that she at least wanted one. I can't remember if she got one. But I remember her saying to me, like, I want a doula and this and that. And I was like, I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Like, this is so foreign to me.
Yeah.
Midwives, I understood.
Yeah.
Doulas, I was a little bit, you know, naive too. And I've looked a bit more into it now. And I think that it's a great resource if you can afford a doula and that's the path that you want to go down. Super interesting that you just didn't even know what a midwife was.
Yeah.
When I went to get prepared to give birth to my first, they said, oh, you'll go through the midwifery program with the Canberra Hospital. And I, in my mind, was like, well, don't I need a doctor?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's funny that you'd never heard of it and you would love it. I was like, no, I need a doctor. I don't need a midwife.
Yeah.
And in the end, I loved having a midwife. And I had the continuity program. So I had the same
one. Oh, that's awesome.
The whole way through. And then I had her again with my second.
Yeah.
So that was amazing.
That's the goal, isn't it?
I literally, as soon as I found out I was pregnant, I was like, okay, well, I want my same midwife. So I've still got a number. I'll contact her.
Yeah. That's awesome.
I'll do it. And they're like, no, we'll contact her, but it should be fine.
Because I heard it's a pretty competitive program.
It's super competitive.
Yeah.
I had no idea though, because I live in the south, I was always going to go to the Canberra Hospital. I think Calvary is way harder to get the continuity program. Whereas in the Canberra Hospital, the midwifery program goes through the birth center, which is fully set up as the birth center.
It's nice, yeah.
It's luxe. It's a beautiful place to give birth. And they have these beautiful big tubs. And I ended up having two water births. So it was so good that I ended up being there for that. Not planned, by the way. Like, I was going in like, definitely going to have drugs. Like, give me all the drugs. Put the needles in me, please.
Yeah.
But enough about me. You decided you wanted, you know, this collaborative to be for America and Australia.
I actually wasn't originally going to introduce it into Australia because I think because of my sister-in-law, I thought everyone in Australia knew their options.
Yep.
I think I was just like, well, you guys have the public health care system. My sister-in-law is super knowledgeable, so everyone must be knowledgeable.
Yep.
Obviously, me being a bit naive. But once I introduced it into America, that's when I was getting messages from Australian doulas and Australian pelvic floor PTs being like, hey, people still don't realize what we are here.
Yeah.
Could you bring it here? Like, you're based here. Would it be hard? And I was like, no, it actually wouldn't be hard. I just didn't think it was necessary. So I ran like a really small survey of like Australian moms on the East Coast just to like kind of get their idea of like, would this be helpful here in Australia? And based off of that, people were like, I wish I would have known what a doula was.
Yep.
I had no idea about mental health specialists that focus on postpartum depression. Like they said, basically, Australia is really good at preparing you for pregnancy and labor and birth. It's the postpartum.
You get really great home care afterwards from your midwife up to about 3 weeks.
Yeah.
You get your I think 10, you get 10 visits or something like that within the first few weeks. And then after that, it's like, here's the phone numbers.
Mm.
And if you need to talk to someone, talk to these people. Yeah. And it's just one brochure that you lose because you're in like a fog.
Yeah.
And you can't remember where you put it down, or the baby, a bigger baby has ripped it up while you're feeding the smaller baby, or whatever happens to be. And you kind of go, I don't know where to start. So I'm just not going to bother.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think that was one of the biggest things. And also, before I started the director, I was actually nannying.
Yep.
So I was a nanny for a few kids here in Canberra. And even though, I guess I just assumed, like, you guys have, you know, typically 8 months to a year maternity leave. Obviously, you commented yesterday and you were like, I took less time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would have taken more if I had my time again.
I just think I was a bit naive. I was like, well, if they get that much time off work, they have all of this. Like, obviously, their stresses are less.
Yeah.
But once I started nannying here in Canberra, I realized that there's still so much going on postpartum.
So the U.S. for maternity leave is really short, isn't it?
So there is no federal maternity leave.
Right.
So it's only through your company, and typically it's 2 to 6 weeks.
I think I was like still bleeding at 6 weeks.
You would
you know,
be.
Like you're not fully recovered.
No. 6 weeks is pretty much the max. Like if you get 6 weeks, that's very, very lucky. My sister got 2 weeks and then they said you can stay off, but we're not paying you.
So was her job protected?
No, your job isn't protected in the U.S. And I mean, maybe at that 6 week mark it is if you work for a very, very good company. But most of the time, no.
2 weeks.
2 weeks.
2 weeks.
Yeah, that's pretty much the
limping.
Average.
You're limping still.
It's insane.
Get out of the car properly. You can barely drive.
Yeah, the system is not good. And then I know that our obstetric violence rates are a lot higher as well. And dealing with that maternal mortality rate, like being a Black woman myself growing up in the U.S., obviously I don't have any kids yet, but I've experienced that racism within that medical system. I would say here in Australia has actually been pretty good. I feel like I haven't had any issues, but in America, for sure, like I've been dismissed countless and countless of times, which is also just being a woman, but being a like woman of color as well makes a difference.
A hysterical woman of color.
Yeah, exactly. Like you're just being dramatic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny when you find a doctor that finally listens to you as a woman.
You want to cry.
You're just like, oh, because my doctor's in the north and I live in the south and, you know, in Canberra terms, why would you drive all the way to the north? Because he listens to me.
Yeah, exactly.
And he allowed me the chance to say, this is what I'm thinking and can I please get a scan? And he goes, here's the scan document. You know,
that's
whereas
awesome.
Like some of them will be like, no, you're being crazy.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter if I'm being crazy.
Yeah.
I need you to be my doctor.
Exactly. You work for me.
Yeah.
I don't work for
I'm
you.
I'm still paying for this.
Yeah.
So you've obviously had people in your life, like your sister-in-law, who are doing the birth thing, gone through the birth thing. You're watching the American version, the Australian version.
Yeah.
As someone who doesn't have kids yet, but has admitted that you thought you would by now, considering your maternal.
Definitely thought I would have by now. I think I'm going to wait 2 or 3 years because originally I wanted to go back to the U.S. and have kids. And then obviously diving deeper into this work, I think I'll probably do
that
it
was
here
my
in
question.
Australia.
Where would you now want to have your child? I mean, there's a natural pull, I assume, to go back to America because family, friends, you know, you'd feel comfortable.
Exactly.
But Australia's healthcare system...
is
you know,
a lot better.
Better.
Yeah, because I was actually just talking to my mom about this on Saturday because, like, my goal is I would love to be so close to my mom. But even, like, for example, here, I would say it's pretty common for people to get 2 weeks off work around Christmas.
Yep.
Okay, in America, that's not a standard. Like, my mom pretty much got 4 days off a year. And so, like, for her to come here to Australia when I give birth is unrealistic. But the thing I have to constantly toss up is, do I go back knowing that my chances of dying are higher? Like, even if I do have a midwife, like, sure, birthing with a midwife puts me at a better chance. But say something does come up in postpartum and I do have to go to a hospital. What is that local hospital stat when it comes to Black people that come in? What's their survival rate? Or do I say here in Australia, where the stat's a lot better, it's covered. I mean, let's talk about America's cost of birth.
That was another thing I was going to mention when I was researching that myself.
You'd have to
weigh up, you know, do I go and save all this money to go and have a baby over in America to be close to my mom? Or do I pay for my mom to fly over?
Yeah.
You know, like, what? Yeah.
Yeah, and I automatically, you know, get a midwife through the public healthcare system. I can go into the birthing center, obviously, as long as I'm low risk and everything. But it's still a better system. There's still maternity leave. There's still all of that surrounding me. Where in the U.S., it's just so much harder. And the wages are lower, so it's harder to survive off a lower wage and also pay for great health insurance. So we were talking about this on Saturday. We decided Australia's smarter. Yeah. for sure.
Yeah.
And then maybe moving to America for like 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
After all the kids are born. Yeah.
How many kids are we thinking?
I'm thinking 3.
Yeah.
Having 2, adopting 1. I've always wanted to adopt. Yeah.
That's
so
amazing.
We'll see though, because I know that it's hard to adopt in Australia. It's easier to adopt in America, but I've had a few aunts that have adopted like 5 or 6 kids.
Yep.
And there's definitely a lot of trauma. So I think you just have to figure out how much you can bring into your family with kids already there as well.
And I guess when you realize you have your own trauma.
Exactly.
Can you do that to a child? Is it going to bring up things that you don't know are festering?
Yeah. Well, that's one thing that my therapist said is they said sometimes usually the PTSD kicks in the first time you have sex, but then it can also kick in when your kids get around to the same age that you were abused.
Right.
Yeah. So it's like, it probably will come back up when my kids get between like that 4 to 7 age group.
That must be tough to sort of know that it's coming and never really know when.
It sucks.
Yeah. And is it something that sort of rears its ugly head often now, or do you feel quite in control of it?
Yeah, so it's a lot better now. I still have triggers. Like, there's certain things I can't do like I used to. There's, like, I can't watch sex scenes. I can't watch makeout scenes.
Yeah.
Where, like, before all of that, like, before the first time I had sex, like, all of that was fine.
It was
like,
normal.
Yeah, it was fine. I was like, yep, I can watch a sex scene. Like, who cares?
Yeah.
Now it's, like, we have to skip them. Like, makeout scenes, have to skip them.
Wow.
Yeah, so, like, I've noticed, I don't think I've had a nightmare in probably, like, a year. I don't think I've had a flashback in probably, like, 2 years.
Well, that's quite good.
Yeah, so it's quite good. I'm doing quite well. I just hope it doesn't come up when I have kids, but I guess we'll find out.
It's just that thing, you've got to risk, don't you?
Yeah.
And for someone like yourself who is so maternal, it would be too devastating to not go down that route
in case
something was to come up. So you have endometriosis.
Yes.
And you thought by now you would have been a mum. But by the way, you're a very young pup, 25, still got so much time.
Yeah.
Do you worry about endo and naturally conceiving?
I do. It's a lot better than it used to be because my aunt actually had endo. She had stage 4. She was diagnosed when she was in high school. And they had always told her, like, your chances of getting pregnant is just not going to happen.
Yeah.
So she ended up having unprotected sex and got pregnant. So I feel like for me, when I first started like 2.5 years ago, really digging into what is my endo looking like, I was a bit more worried. Having surgery, they only found stage 2. And they said majority of it was on my bowel and my rectum. So they were like, you had a little bit on your right ovary, but not much.
Right.
So, like, that kind of helped with my confidence. And then really deep diving into, like, the natural side of things. So, like, acupuncture, nutrition, because I've seen my symptoms come down. So, like, before I got a proper diagnosis, like, my periods were, like, a 12 out of 10.
Yeah.
Like, throwing up, diarrhea, losing so much blood, like, couldn't walk for 8 hours. To now maybe, like, a 2 out of 10 for 30 minutes or no pain at all. I don't lose a lot of blood. I don't have blood clotting. And I also chart my cycle through the symptothermal method. So that also makes me feel more confident so I can confirm ovulation. I can look at my hormone levels. But it's definitely always something that's in the back of my head.
Because you see so many stories as well of, because endometriosis was pretty taboo subject for so long.
Yeah. Australia's pretty good now, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, really, really good.
And that is awesome that people are talking about it. But unfortunately, with so much talking about it, you do, like, I find I hear so much negative.
Yeah.
I can't have kids, or it, you know, I needed a hysterectomy or whatever. And you're not hearing as many, like, positive things. And you're obviously trying to be super positive with your diagnosis in that you're trying to, like, eat the right diet and do the right things for your body and listen to your body.
Yeah.
So hopefully that's, like, a great outcome.
Yeah.
When the kid thing happens.
Yeah, definitely.
Down the track.
Yeah, because I think one of the other big things that helped me is there's this book. It was published in 1990. So it's all of these women from 1980s and 1990, I believe in the US and the UK, that had endo.
Mm.
They had done all the surgeries. They'd done, you know, the pill. They had done the, like, super hardcore hormonal treatments like Lupron. And they just basically got to a point where they were fed up with it. And because they decided to go, this is kind of what introduced me into the natural side of it. I didn't think there was one before this. But looking at that book, there's all these, they were like, you know, we looked at acupuncture. We looked at doing therapy. We did the gut health, blood sugar check, vitamin mineral deficiencies. And I think almost all of them were able to get pregnant naturally afterwards.
Amazing.
Yeah. And then there's a lady at Govita, if you guys ever want to go talk to her. She's at the Woden Go Vita. Her name's Fiona. She also was told she would never be able to have kids because of her endo. And then she decided to really deep dive into reducing inflammation, and then she got pregnant.
So that's what it is. It's the inflammation that you it's try the inflammation. And control.
Yeah, so endometriosis is an inflammatory condition, but it has an estrogen component. So we have really high estrogen. That's why you might see a lot of us with things like fibroids.
Yep.
Because they know fibroid has that estrogen component as well. We also have higher rates of developing breast cancer. But it has to do with inflammation and the immune system.
Right.
Yeah, so getting that inflammation down is huge for us. And it usually comes back to gut.
Hey, it's me stopping in to remind you that it's okay to feel mother's guilt, because we all do. Seeing as Erin is not yet a mum, she won't have any mother's guilt to share at the end of this episode. However, if you haven't caught up on past episodes yet, now is your chance to go back and have a listen. And let's get back into it. So Moonly is your nutrition and wellness page.
Yes, it is.
And so that is more dedicated to your endo endo journey.
Definitely. So Ona's is more of like the motherhood, maternity care provider awareness, helping people find the right providers. Moonly is, I recently just got my diploma in nutritional therapy, which is exciting. And basically I work with people that have endo, fibroids, painful periods. And alongside that, typically things like thyroid and PCOS.
Yep.
So I really work towards trying to identify what's truly going on. So if you're having painful periods and say you don't have endometriosis or adenomyosis or fibroids, there's a reason you have painful periods. We're going to be looking at your prostaglandin levels and your estrogen levels, which usually go back to your gut or your HPA axis.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when I really start to deep dive with those clients. And it's super fun. I really like being able to connect with other people who have been on a similar journey. And I think that kind of helps the fact that I've had the endo. Obviously, in the endo community, we don't trust a lot of people anymore because people don't know about this disease and they give us
crap resolutions. We come back to being a hysterical woman.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. So being someone who's had that endo and has lived with it, it gets people trust me a lot more, which I really appreciate, because I can also relate. I'm like, yep, I know exactly what that pain feels like.
Do you find you see a lot of mothers who have changed since childbirth, or are you seeing women who are more leaning towards potentially having kids?
So I think I have one client that's already a mother, but most of them are like in their 20s, so pre.
Yeah.
But then I do have quite a few reaching out that have already had hysterectomies and then they're in their 20s.
Yeah,
so
right.
So that would be focusing on those menopause symptoms.
Gee, that would be hard, wouldn't it? Having a hysterectomy in your 20s.
Well, yeah, because they're finding like the earlier you have the hysterectomy, you're more likely to develop things like heart disease and osteoporosis. I think a lot of them are very, very frustrated, especially because they found that having a hysterectomy actually doesn't cure endo.
I heard that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I heard that recently, that someone had a full hysterectomy, but it didn't really change much.
No.
And you just kind of go, well, now I'm a young person in, you know, my early 20s who may or may not have wanted a kid yet, but
it's
the decision's been made for me.
Yeah.
And I know in my early 20s I was like, kids, I don't know, maybe, maybe not.
Yeah.
And if I'd had a hysterectomy, I probably would have been like, great, this makes things easy.
Yeah.
And then I would have got to 27, 28 when I really wanted a kid and been really upset.
Yeah.
That would have been hard. That could cause depression and anxiety in these young girls.
Yeah, exactly. And the thing they found with endo, the reason that hysterectomy doesn't cure it is because originally they thought endometriosis was the tissue of the uterine lining growing in other parts of the body.
Mm-hmm.
And now that they've done extensive research, they've actually found the tissue is similar, but it's not actually the same.
Right.
And so it's growing, you know, all over the pelvis, but they've also found it on every organ in the body. So they found it on the brain, the heart, the liver, the gallbladder. So
the brain.
Yeah, they found it on the brain. There was a case of that. It was in the nose. They found it on the heart, the liver, lung. A girl actually had her lung collapse in from how much tissue was pulling it. And they ended up having to sew it back up to keep it inflated.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's a very excruciating disease. I consider myself very lucky for only having it in my pelvis, to be honest. But yeah, a lot of doctors say you need a hysterectomy, and then you get the hysterectomy and you're left with the side effects of, you know, going through early menopause, but then also you're still having pain because the endo wasn't actually removed.
It's not until you do get a bit older and you take the time to like understand, you know, in your teens when you get your period. Mm. And I got mine when I was 11. I think I saw on your Instagram you got yours at 10.
Yeah, yeah.
So we were pretty young to get ours. And you're like navigating like puberty, but you've already got your period, but everyone else is getting it like 2 years after you.
Yeah. And did you know what your period was when you started?
I knew because I have an older sister.
Okay.
And she had just gotten hers not that long before me. So I think we synced up. And so she felt like more of a normal age to get it.
Yeah.
But I just remember thinking like, I feel really young. I remember feeling young to have it.
Yeah.
And I knew what it was, but I also was like, I don't want to tell my mom.
Really?
Yeah. I weirdly like didn't want to go and tell my mom.
Yeah. Because it was just like this weird thing that's happening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you know what it was?
No, I had no idea what was.
Well, 10. 10 is so young.
Yeah. Like I had no idea. I honestly went to the bathroom. I wiped and I was like, oh, there's blood. And my mom, at this point, she was working 3 jobs.
Yeah. Whoa.
Yeah. So she was like in bed
Superwoman.
Asleep. Yeah. And I was like, mom, my butt's bleeding. And she was like, oh.
It's probably not your butt.
Yeah. She's like, no, she was just like, oh, I'm sure it's nothing. I'll check it when I wake up. And I was like a few hours later, I was like, mom, I'm still bleeding. And then she came in and checked. She was like, oh, okay, well, like, let's have this conversation.
Yeah.
And then I was a competitive swimmer. So then she was like, okay, so this is what a tampon is.
Oh, my God. I will never forget the first tampon. And it was
it's so painful.
Because we were going for a beach holiday.
Yeah,
I had no choice to use it. And I'm like, this is so painful. I'm going to cry.
It's so painful. And then taking it out the first time as well.
It's all too much.
Yeah.
It's so much. And you're so young. And oh my God. I think I was lucky because I was 11, but I was turning 12. So I was in year 7. So we'd started sex ed.
Yeah.
Like we had the PE. Like sex ed.
Yeah, but I've heard Australia's sex ed's better than America's sex ed.
Is it?
Apparently. What was your sex ed like?
I knew what a period was. So I guess I was that much prepared.
Yeah.
I don't remember doing like any condoms on bananas or anything like that. But I don't know. I never felt too like, I never felt like we knew too much about sex education. And I never felt like I didn't know enough. Like I knew penis and vagina, probably going to have a baby. So put a condom on sort of thing. Yeah. But, and I knew that I had a period when I had a period. But I don't know. Like I have the worst memory.
But yeah, like my sex ed, I feel like the only thing I remember from my sex ed was it was a lot of like STDs. It was just like, yep, this was going to happen if you have sex. So just don't do it.
Yeah.
I was like, cool.
Thanks for listening to Mother Time Madness. You can follow me at with.cords on Instagram and find me withcords.com.au. Canberra mums have amazing stories. If you or someone you know should be on this podcast, please contact me. I can't wait to chat to you. Next week, I'll be chatting to Yads Couchy. She's a mother of 3 and a dermal therapist in Canberra and, well, an overachiever.
So I'm the type of person that likes to be very, very busy, losing my mind in the process. I'm halfway through my master's and I think people have said to me, like, when you're halfway through, that's when you kind of think, why am I doing this? Which is exactly where I'm at. My life is a hot mess. As you can probably tell, I work on autopilot. So some of my attention to detail is completely shot. It's not anywhere near as good as it used to be when I was pre-kids.
And if you like this podcast, I would love for you to rate and share it.